Positive Chats podcast on the air right now for Thursday, February 17th. February is Human Trafficking Month. Bill Wolf, I did not know that.
You know, it's such an incredible issue. It's on the heels of coming off of the Christmas holiday and everything else. So sometimes it's often overlooked. But it's a whole month.
I think a lot of times we hear phrases, we hear wording, we hear things on TV or on the radio, in the media. Let's break it down. What exactly is human trafficking?
At its core, it's exploiting other people for profit, right? So these are individuals that they are abusing, they're exploiting, they're manipulating, and somehow making profit off of that. And so in the United States, we recognize sort of two forms of human trafficking. One is sex trafficking, exploiting people in the commercial industry. And the other is labor trafficking, where they're forcing people to work for unfair wages, you know, under unfair conditions. It's some pretty egregious stuff.
And you have a lot of experience in this. You've dedicated your personal and professional life to combating human trafficking, notably recognized as receiving the Presidential Medal of Extraordinary Efforts to Combat Trafficking in Persons. And you basically started your professional career as a police officer. So you've seen probably the entire gamut of this and had to deal with it in one way or another.
Yeah, I really have. But, you know, about kind of not even knowing that there was a human trafficking month, I can tell you as a police officer, I didn't even know there was human trafficking until I was kind of forced into a case involving it. But it was so interesting because I was a gang detective at the time. We were working a case against MS-13, which I'm sure most of your listeners have heard of. And we were building evidence for a case, and we had an informant, and he's telling us what's going on. And we just really didn't understand, right? And I don't say that lightly, but it was really kind of highlights our misunderstanding of what's actually happening in the world. And we took the evidence of the prosecutor. We said, do we have a case here? And the prosecutor said, you've got a great human trafficking case. I remember looking at my partner. I said, what the heck is human trafficking? Mm. And it was really that one case that opened my eyes to the reality and how prevalent this issue really is in our country.
You kind of feel like the movie Taken kind of put that center stage, Liam Neeson.
To some extent, you know, I think, but the problem with some of the things that we see on Hollywood, in particular Taken, is the what it portrays as trafficking is not what it really looks like here in our country. And so people are oftentimes looking for instances where people are being kidnapped or, you know, being chained up and drugged and held against their will. But that's not what human trafficking looks like in most parts of the world, and definitely not in the United States.
There are a lot of facts. Let's say every 30 seconds a child or a teen is sold in this industry of the United States. That's staggering when you stop and you really think about that, because for someone, their whole life just flipped, turned upside down in a matter of seconds.
It is. And the reality that it's going on all around us, you know, and oftentimes we're just not equipped to see it or properly identify it. You know, I would be willing to bet that most of your viewers have seen a human trafficking victim while out in public and just didn't know that they were seeing one.
Is there a way to be able to spot that?
Yeah, I think one of the important things is that folks really take it upon themselves to educate, to understand what those signs and symptoms are. And then the other piece to that is not just educating themselves, but making sure that they're willing to take action, you know, to report something when they see it. And I, all too often, we run into situations where even professionals that have been trained are not comfortable reporting to the authorities that they suspect human trafficking.
What do we look for, let's say, as a parent?
Yeah, so parents are really on the front lines of this, because the average age that somebody in the United States is drawn into sex trafficking is about 15 to 16 years old. And some as young as 9 years old. I worked a case as a police officer with a 9-year-old victim. What they need to be looking for are changes in behavior, right? That's going to be one of the first key indicators. And really understanding when a child becomes more isolated, more secretive, when they have a friend, a boyfriend or a girlfriend that they're not willing to talk about or share information about. These are all sort of primary indicators, because the way that traffickers work is a 3-step process, and they all use this process. The first one is really a recruiting phase, right, where they're going to be looking for potential victims, people that would, make a good victim, looking for three things. They're looking for accessibility, right? How do I get access to this individual to groom them? Well, nowadays, all these teenagers, they have cell phones, right? And this is how traffickers are getting access to them, especially with COVID, when we've moved much more online, just as a society. They're looking for suggestibility, meaning, has this child ever received any sort of prevention or awareness training? Do they know what they're looking for? Or can I suggest to them that this is normal behavior? And then the last thing that they're looking for is some sort of vulnerability that they can exploit. And we know that all of our teenagers have vulnerabilities. It's just, we as adults have vulnerabilities too, right? Yeah. It's just allowing someone to know what that vulnerability is and then exploiting it.
Bill, it sounds like what you're saying is they're studied. They're watched.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. I mean, these traffickers are very methodical. They take quite a bit of time. And that's another thing that people need to realize. This is not the white work van pulling up and kidnapping kids off the street corner. These individuals are engaging in relationships with them because they want to build trust. Because once they build that trust, it's so much easier to manipulate them into the commercial sex industry.
We're observing that February is Human Trafficking Month, and we're spending time understanding as parents the signs that we can look for when it deals with our kids. You said as young as 15, 16 years old, and they're being watched, they're being sought out.
Absolutely, right? And part of that is the internet safe component, knowing what our young people are doing online, implementing, you know, as parents, implementing certain safeguards to make sure that these traffickers don't have access to kids online, or the kids are prepared for when they're approached by a trafficker. The National Center for Missing and Exploited Children estimates that 1 in 5 kids, I want that to sink in for a second, 1 in 5 kids will be approached by a trafficker at some point during their adolescent years. I mean, that's an incredible number. I'm a father of 6 myself. That means statistically, at least one of my kids will be approached by a trafficker. Mm-hmm. What are we doing to prepare them for that moment and making sure that they know what options they have and how to get out of that situation?
What exactly does a trafficker look like? Do they carry a certain trait?
You know, they look like you and me. They look like every people on the street. And that, I think, is something that's very, it's hard for people to conceptualize, right? Because there is no one specific demographic. There is no one style of dress, or they're not wearing a uniform or a name tag that says I'm a trafficker. It's really more about behaviors, right? It's really about how they try to isolate and manipulate people. It's how they try to coerce them into uncomfortable situations. Those are things that we need to be looking for. But really, you know, from a standpoint, you know, you can't necessarily be walking through the mall and point out that's a trafficker there and that's a trafficker there. Unless you're looking at the behaviors, there are behavioral indicators that sometimes we look for.
Is it possible that from time to time they can come through people that you're aware of, people that are friends of yours, the coworker?
Absolutely. And so oftentimes we'll, because again, it's all about building trust with these individuals to be able to manipulate them. So oftentimes they will try to get an introduction through somebody else. And this could be somebody that's already being exploited, or it could be somebody that they just know, to try to build trust, whether that is like a coworker. Think about, you know, a 15, 16-year-old that's at their first job in a retail store, right? Maybe talking to somebody else and getting an introduction. They also, the online introductions too, they will oftentimes friend, you know, if you and I were friends on Facebook, and I know the kids don't use Facebook anymore, but, you know, you and I are friends on Facebook, the trafficker may friend you first and then say, hey, you know, I know your friend over here, and so it's cool, right? So it's kind of building that trust automatically because it's a sort of a reference, if you will.
Bill, we talked about the key signs to look for, and we know now what they're looking for. What if you're a parent and something does happen?
So, you know, the first steps are to understand and actually admit, you know, admit's probably not the right word, recognize what's going on. I've worked with so many parents who were in denial. They didn't want to believe that it was happening to their child, and then that made it much worse. There's an incredible organization, the Parent Coalition to End Human Trafficking. run by a dear friend of mine, Susan Young. Susan Young is a survivor parent. Her daughter was trafficked. And she founded this organization, and her whole mission is to support parents and families who are navigating this very difficult situation. And so I'd encourage folks to reach out. There are resources out there, but get help. Recognize what's happening, acknowledge it, and then get help, because nobody can or should have to navigate that situation on their own.
I've got to be careful how I phrase this. If you're a younger listener right now, God forbid something were to happen to them, what do they do?
Well, you know, the traffickers, one of the things that the traffickers really do well, I guess, if we want to say it that way, is they make their victims feel hopeless, helpless. They make them feel isolated, like nobody will understand. And so if you had a, you know, somebody that was listening right now that was in one of these exploitive situations, what I would say is you do have a choice. There are options. There are people that understand and can get you help, and you're not stuck in that situation. I don't know who to reach out to. I didn't know anyone that would understand what was happening. I will share a quick story with you. When I was a police officer, we recovered a young lady. Her name was Emily, out of a hotel. Emily was 17 years old. And we took her back to the police station. We were interviewing her about what had happened, and found out that she had been trafficked for over 3 years, since the age of 14. And as we were interviewing her, we found out that her parents, the school, they recognized that things were wrong, right? Because her grades started slipping. She started falling asleep in class. She started having behavioral issues. And so people started getting involved, administrators at school, counselors at school. They got her into counseling outside of school. Eventually the juvenile justice system got involved because she was missing school a lot. I was shocked. As I was sitting there thinking to myself, I said, Emily, how is it possible you were surrounded by all these professionals for 3 years? Nobody ever identified you as a human trafficking victim. And I remember it clear as day. She looked at me and she said, because nobody ever asked. If somebody would have just taken the time to ask me and I would have felt like I could have disclosed to them what was happening, I would have. But I never felt like I had somebody in my life. So really the message, you know, we need to create an environment where people are comfortable to report these things. As parents, I think we need to make sure that we're having very open conversations with our kids so that they know that when they're in an uncomfortable situation, or even when they're in an exploitive situation, that they can come and talk to us and we'll be able to get them the help that they need.
I think I learned something from you a second ago. When I think of human trafficking, I think of kidnapped and taken away. You can still be in school and still be in the middle of a human trafficking case.
90% of minors, of kids that are trafficked, are still going to school every day and sleeping in their own beds every night. And I think that's part of what the traffickers want you to think, that it is that kidnapping. It is that scenario where kids are going missing. Does that happen? It does sometimes, right? But it's usually much later on in the exploitative cycle. In the beginning, the kids are, they're right in front of us as parents. And I think that's part of the reason why parents are so reluctant or hesitant to acknowledge what's happening, because they feel like they failed somewhere along the way. But the problem is we've got to understand, not many people are educated on human trafficking, right? It's not something that we hear about. Parents get all kinds of information from the schools around, you know, drug addiction and preventing suicide and things like that. But how many schools are actually sending parents home information about, hey, your child could be targeted by a human trafficker?
Yeah.
And we've got to do better. We've got to educate parents better on these issues so that they can protect their children.
And I think that's one of the reasons why we took this approach, because this moment with you, we wanted to keep it simple and we didn't want to get it too elaborate. What are we looking for out of someone who is a victim? What are the signs to look out for? And I'm still floored that it's possible that a student can go to school, be living under all that fear, and not see anything. I can't process that.
I think it is very difficult. I can say it was even difficult for me when I first started working these, but it's a reality. And once you understand how manipulative these traffickers are, see, traffickers have learned it's much easier to exploit somebody through mental manipulation than it is through physical force. and become masters of manipulation. And they know all the right things to say. And one of the things as adults that I think we oftentimes forget, because we've built up some safeguards, we've become a little callous, emotionally callous sometimes to certain situations. But young people are very vulnerable, especially they're very emotionally vulnerable. And when traffickers come in, there is one word that has a lot of power and a lot of meaning to them that we oftentimes forget the true power of it. And that's the L word, love. Mm. And these traffickers create an environment of love. They exploit the vulnerabilities, whether the kid, you know, these young people are dealing with self-esteem issues, whether they're struggling, you know, to really connect with their parents, they're struggling with their identity, whatever the case may be, these traffickers take advantage of that.
Bill, where can we go to understand more things? Because certainly human trafficking has developed this far. It's going to continue to become more savvy.
Right, and it will. So I'd encourage our listeners to go to enough.org. Enough is Enough is a fantastic organization that's really focused on, since 1994, has been focused on making the internet safer for children and families. And on that website, there's all kinds of resources to help parents understand what the threats and risks are and how to mitigate those risks, particularly around human trafficking, online sexual exploitation, and other dangers that exist out there.
Bill, you have been huge this morning. I think of all the podcasts you had a chance to host, I think it's probably the one that really stands out most. It's possible that a student can go to school, maybe miss a few days. Kids play hooky all the time. I did. You know,
that type of thing. Yeah, right.
But to find out that there's a possibility they can be living in fear, no one's asking about it because we don't know the signs.
I will tell you this. Traffickers look for the path of least resistance. And what that means is if we're safeguarding ourselves, if we're safeguarding our children, traffickers are going to look somewhere else. They don't want to fight. They don't want to have to work harder than they really need to exploit somebody. So if we say no, and if we're able to identify it, and I'll share just a quick story with you on the way out. There's a young lady, her name was Maria, a great young lady, had everything for her except she really wanted a boyfriend. This trafficker found out about it. He manipulated, groomed her, and was getting her to that point when he was going to exploit her. She happened to go to school and sit through a program around human trafficking. She identified what was happening to her, went home, reported to mom, and both of them together were able to get her out of the situation. Law enforcement got involved and arrested the bad guy. It's such a great story of hope to say that just simple awareness through education can prevent somebody from being trafficked or get them out of a really bad situation.
Remain educated, remain vigilant, and you mentioned Enough is Enough.
Enough is Enough, yes.
Got it. And where do we find more information on Enough is Enough?
Go to enough.org. And there's all kinds of resources that are out there, as well as a program on internet safety that I'd encourage all of your listeners to check out.